G'day folks, talk to Vicky Simos from Thilo Active Therapy, yarning about her style of therapy incorporating martial arts and boxing, mainly working with kids, children, young adults, finding the best versions of themselves, empowerment, discipline, accountability, finding those building blocks, those foundations to set the right trajectory. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. And we've also got a Patreon page. The link is within the description. So if you check it out and you want to roll with the squad and become a patron, that would be awesome. And I want to thank our sponsors. Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they've got great assistive tech also. So righto. Let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Vicky Simos, or is it Simos?
No, it's Simos. You got it right the first time.
Boom. On the money there. Righto. Thilo Active Therapy. So I really appreciate you jumping on the podcast and having a yarn. And just wanted to know, which part of Australia are you in?
I'm in Melbourne, Victoria.
Melbourne, Victoria. Awesome. How is it down that way at the moment, just weather-wise and all the craziness going on?
which one do you want me to answer first? Weather-wise, it's been pretty good, actually, pretty good warm weather. Obviously, we're heading into, you know, autumn, winter soon. The craziness, well, the traffic, there's a lot more traffic, so there's a lot more craziness on the roads, and that doesn't fail. You know, every day, like driving home from work, it's like, yep, there's another one. But look, can't complain.
Yeah, well, it's good, you know, down your way, because obviously with the state of Victoria and just how you guys have been locked down pretty hard compared to the other states, so it's, and but now you're seeing, but it's got to do with weather, because I'm up in New South Wales on the Central Coast, and then you're looking at, you know, we're not getting nowhere near a smash. We have caught some rain, but not like the North Coast and Queensland. Like, they've just really copped it pretty harsh up there with all the floods and everything else going on. So, but yeah, it's, there's a lot of difficult times for a lot of people, well, not just in Australia, but everywhere. And that's where I wanted to jump into what you do, because it seems like it's geared around a lot of mental health. Is that safe to say?
That would be, yes, a very good assumption there. Very good assumption.
So when you're talking about the field that you're in, so from what I've looked at when it's got to do with various social media accounts and whatnot, so if it's looking at, and it's just getting individuals' heads around it. So because when you're looking at mainstream, you're looking at counselling, psychology, psychiatry. So where does psychotherapy fit into that? So, and the word itself, and how does that apply with what you're doing?
That's a very good question. No one's asked me that one before. Psychotherapy is basically like using the various therapies, like your CBTs, like pretty much like psychology. The only real difference is we don't have to be registered to practice versus, you know, someone as a psychologist. That being said, we can sort of chop and change, you know, because psychotherapy, counselling, you can chop and change the modalities of the therapies. But what I do, I take it to a kind of next level. And depending on who I'm working with, I sort of integrate the therapy to the martial arts. So, again, that depends on the age group. So, generally, if they're under 10, I'll work through using karate. But if they're a bit older, above the 10, into the teenage years, I tend to go more the boxing. But, again, that depends on the maturity of the young person and where they're at and what they're dealing with. So I take all of that into account, basically.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, that's touching on a lot of facets there. But going back to those three letters that you throw out there, what is that, just for the listeners and viewers, when you said CBT, what is it? What does that mean?
It's cognitive behavior therapy. It's one of the modalities. There's a lot of modalities out there, but it's one that gets used a lot. And it's basically challenging, you know, young people or any person really about their thoughts. Because a lot of us, and, you know, I can certainly attest to that, you know, you'll have some thoughts where it's just not logical thoughts, but for you it is. And then basically with the CBT, it's challenging those thoughts and saying, you know, throwing out questions about what the person's thinking. Like, e.g., you know, I had one young person say to me, you know, I've got no friends at school, everyone hates me. And it's like, is that really true? Like, are you...
Hold on.
You know what happened? The phone started ringing. Of course it did during the podcast.
These things happen anyway. Show goes on.
It does. And if you didn't hear that, it's basically challenging unrealistic thoughts, or not so much unrealistic, but thoughts that we wouldn't normally have, that someone else, because, you know, they're so caught up in what's happening for them, that to them it feels real, but it's not, and it's challenging those thoughts.
And is it hard, like, when you're looking at what's subjective, objective, and how that applies to an individual and just like everyday life, whether they're at home, community, school, work, whatever that looks like?
Well, at the end of the day, like, what I try and do, and it's not always easy and I'm not perfect at it, is putting yourself in their shoes. So showing empathy, basically, and trying to understand where they're coming from.
That's where it all starts, yeah.
Exactly right, because what you might believe, someone else might not believe, and vice versa. So you can't sort of say to them, well, that's stupid. You know what I mean? You've got to go with what they're saying, because to them it's very real.
100%. And what drew you into this field? Because there's a lot, it's so tricky when it comes to the complexities of mental health, or when it's got to just to do with the human brain and the complexities, and because a lot of this is invisible. It's not like when you're looking at, you know, because I work and you know, I'm a quadriplegic, and you can look at me and go, yeah, that bloke's in a wheelchair, he's got a disability. But when you just say you're at a shopping center and you're looking at all these uprights, like people that individuals that are walking around, you just don't know what's within. Hey,
well, that's true. They could have more problems than you, you know, and a lot of them do. And I'm not taking anything away. I'm sure you've had extreme challenges in what you've had to face. But, you know, if you compare me, you, other people, you don't know what people are going through. And me personally, my own experiences, to answer your question, is to why I am doing what I'm doing. Mm. I mean, just the last few days I've had issues with my own mental health. With, thank God, I've got a friend who's a counsellor, and we, you know, spent a couple of hours going through my own thoughts, and, you know, I'm good to go. But if someone doesn't know me and I don't speak out, they will never know that I've got issues.
Yeah, well, that's it, eh? And that's tricky too for, I know, individuals in general, like, because if they're feeling, you know, a bit shamed out and they don't want to sort of lay really... excuse me, how they're feeling, and it's like you got to sort of chip away at that surface to see if you can get people to open up, because, you know, it may be better for them, but it's better for yourself too, yeah, if you're talking to that individual to unpack stuff.
Well, absolutely right. And not everyone is going to be like, oh, let's sit down and have a chat. And this is where the martial arts side of things comes in, and that's through my own experiences, where I was never a talker. You know, I was very angry, spent a lot of years being angry, but that was, you know, at its core was through anxiety. But you don't know these things until you research, you seek therapy, you do all those things, which is why I sort of started doing what I do, because I know seeking therapy wasn't something I wanted to do, because, you know, I don't want to sit down and talk about my problems. That being said, of course, I'm a therapist now, but... I think it also helps to have the right people around you.
100%.
And that's where I was pretty lucky as well. I had a very unorthodox trainer when I was training in the martial arts, but, you know, in retrospect, it was the best thing that could have happened. And a therapist or a psychologist who kind of knew me better than I knew me, and was able to sort of delve into it. But you've also got to want it. If you're not ready to take it on, you can throw a million therapists at a person or whatever I'm doing, and it still won't help. So you've really got to be ready as well.
Yeah, and take us through this journey, hey, when you're looking at, I'm fascinated by martial arts, and there's like so much going on when you're looking at, you know, Eastern culture, Western culture, and the melting pot with how they all fold into each other, right? But so, and I love combat sports, big fan. So when you're, and just a discipline that goes into martial arts where it's all on the individual, you know, so, and whether that's not just physically, but a big part of it mentally. So you got into a lot of these martial arts before any of this, the psychotherapy and all of that sort of come into the equation?
Absolutely. And I don't want to kill it because I've also written a book about my experiences, but I actually started martial arts for a boy. Truth be told, I was 15 years old. There was a boy that I liked. My brother used to train in the martial arts. He said, guess who's training? So it kind of started from there, but then I actually became good at it and started training some of the youngsters. So I started in Re Taekwondo, which kind of doesn't exist anymore. There's a lot of variations of it. Became really good at it and then started training the younger ones. And then as I kind of got older, I moved from the country to the city, which is country South Australia, to Adelaide, and then played soccer for about 5 years and then just found that something wasn't right in here. Tried to get the help but was shut down by doctors because back then and, you know, still probably now there's that stigma, or not probably, there is that stigma, but it was a lot more back in the day where if you went to the doctor and said, oh, I think there's something wrong with me, the response was, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine, you're just, and you took with that with you because there was that shame related to it. So for me, I actually didn't seek help until I was in my early 30s. And that's when I went, well, I need to do it if I'm going to study it, because I met with someone, young person, who sort of was drawn to me for some reason, and they had a lot of problems. She was 15 at the time. She's actually going to be 30 now, where she had a lot of issues as well. And it was like, well, if I'm going to help you or help me, I'd be a hypocrite. So that's when I went and started seeking therapy and then went, yep, that's what I want to do too. It was kind of from those two people, like my martial arts instructor, I could see what he could do and the changes that he made with other young people. So I went, yep, I want to do that. And then seeking therapy, seeing my psychologist, and went, yep, I want to do that. Let's see what happens when I combine both, because it worked and it still works for me. I mean, boxing is my saving grace, really.
Yeah, right. So is it that mindset of how maybe when you're looking at Eastern culture and the origin of that martial arts, of what's within that, how maybe it's a little bit different compared to like how us Westerners may look at different facets of life, of how that may help, you know, yourself or other individuals out there?
Well, I don't know about that. Obviously, there's something to it because they teach their youngsters, you know, to do it in the classroom, which is something I wanted to push for but was sort of shut down because it encourages violence. But I think from my own experiences, especially with boxing and now with neuropsychology or neuroscience, neurodiversity, they say that it actually helps because it works. It does something to the brain. It changes neuroplasticity, for a better word, changes the way the brain is made, because back in, you know, many, many years ago, we thought the brain, once it's set, that's it, you can't change it. But research has proven that you actually can change the way you see things, and that's building new neural pathways that creates these new thought patterns, basically. So martial arts, and that is in the research, actually is probably one of the best ways to make that happen. And for me, obviously, I didn't know any of that, but I did notice differences. Like, especially in boxing, it has a way of bringing your emotions to the surface. And, of course, if you've never seen therapy, you don't know what to do with these emotions because they're all scattered.
So is that more than just like, you know, because general exercise is good for everyone when it's got to do with endorphins and that, but is it something to do with the action of combat and just I don't mean, you know, the, because people think of that and where it leads to violence, but I mean just the actual discipline of it and, like you said, what that can bring to the surface.
Well, with boxing and any really martial art, it actually uses both sides of the brain. Because especially, yeah, in all of those, because you've got to be right brain, left brain. When one hand's in boxing, for example, you know, when you throw a punch, you've got to keep the other hand up. And now that sounds simple to me. But for something starting out, that's going to take a long time to get that sort of action where you're hitting and where you're holding up, you know, the other hand to protect yourself. So that's one small example, but that's the way a lot of these martial arts work, because you've got to use both.
Yeah, and that's where I get fascinated too, like how, because I know it's complex just to learn a discipline, right, when it's got to do with if you're looking at your boxing, your karate, your Muay Thai, your, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu or your judo in general. But then when, you know, because I love mixed martial arts, and when you're looking into that and how easily, like when you've got to learn a stance, right, but then it can come pretty natural to people when it's not just having that stance, but how they can switch between stances and get both. It's almost being ambidextrous, but that requires a lot of work and repetition and just drilling, hey?
It certainly does. And one of those sports which you find that happens a lot, where you have to be so focused, so disciplined, and it's just repetitiveness, is stick fighting, which is, its Filipino name is Doce Parras Escrima, which uses either one small stick or two small sticks. And it, although it's a right-handed sport, the advantage is if you're left-handed. But a lot of the training is using both your hands but doing different things with them. Kind of like boxing, but it takes it to another level.
Yeah, you're not copping a fish, you're getting smacked in the head with a stick.
And let me tell you, it hurts even when you got 4 kilos of armor.
Jeez, so how is it? So you said the Philippines, yeah?
Yeah.
So is that still practiced widely over there today?
It certainly is. It absolutely certainly is. Although the Supreme Grandmaster, who was my Supreme Grandmaster as well, passed away, it still followed on from his, you know, grandkids and just basically, you know, any students over there that train, because their headquarters are there as well. I do know of one student who actually used to train with me that runs something here as well. I'm not sure whereabouts they are here in Victoria. But, yeah, it's very much practiced in the Philippines.
Right. And
specifically Cebu. Sorry to cut you off.
No, no, say that again. Sorry,
it's in Cebu is the main place where it's the headquarters are, and where it gets, where it mostly is practiced.
Is that near Manila or where is that?
Oh, now you're asking me a very difficult question. Geographics is not my thing. Possibly not far. Don't. This is where I fail miserably.
It's all good as long as we know it comes from the Philippines. That's the origin. So. You know, and it's a bloody big island, like the same yeah. Like our island, or not as big as Australia. But when you're looking, how do you, like, because did you do that in, not SA, you've done that in Victoria, yeah?
I did that in SA, actually. I have a practice in Victoria. Like, I know the drills. I know a lot of the drills. And if I went sort of back when I go back to visit family and I go and train, it sort of all comes back.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I know I haven't practiced here for a while, but I know the basics. And that being said, I do incorporate some of that in the training that I do with the young people. So that's it sort awesome. Of depends where I'm at. And I like to challenge them a little bit too, because you see the exhaustion in their heads, in their faces of, oh, my God. And it's not physical exhaustion, it's mental exhaustion.
Oh, big time. And so challenges, because you're looking at, talk to us about the degrees of when it's got to do with the blood, sweat and tears, right, the dedication that goes into it to get to the level of belt that you got to in the different facets of martial arts. Like, talk to us about what goes into getting to that degree, like physically and mentally.
A lot. Sure, a lot. Well, look, let me give you an example. I've got a couple of belts under my belt, degrees for a better word, one in like a fourth degree in stick fighting and a second in karate, Ajah Kampo karate. And that's taken a lot of discipline, you know, from not knowing nothing and traveling overseas, fighting once and losing, and that was it, to then going a few years later, and I'm talking like the stick fighting now, to competing and winning, like, you know, a couple of silvers and a bronze, and then, and this is world titles, and then competing in New Zealand to winning gold. It all sounds, oh my God, you know, but wow, the amount of training, like we train a minimum when you're preparing for a competition, minimum was 12 hours a week, up to as many as, you know, you could take, your body could take, your mind could take. And the marks, especially when you're holding sticks, and I'd love to go grab them, but then I'd walk away. Yep. But the markings that it would leave in there and ripping up the skin and, you know, and for boxing, blood noses, crack ribs, broken noses, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like I said, hey, blood, sweat, and tears, and that's straight up the truth.
Literally.
And like, how'd it feel though? Like, when, so you've got to a certain degree, but having that acknowledgement from your peers, you know, when they hand over the belt and just what that means to you, but also getting out to compete and having that confidence, but physically and mentally, like, what that acknowledgement, like from your peers, but being able to go out into the world with those belts, what did that mean to you carrying that?
Oh, look, it's hard to put in words. The only way I guess I can describe it, explain it, is, but when I used to compete for boxing, I struggled to win. I've only ever won one fight, and I'm not ashamed to say that, because, you know, it's not for everyone, and not everyone gets in that ring, because you don't know what to expect. But to end up winning, and to, you know, I'm pretty determined. Not from the very beginning. There were a lot of tears, and there were a lot of times where I went, I'm not doing this, even to try and lose weight for a fight. Like, it's in the book, so I don't want to kill it too much, but it was literally coming to the night before of where I was going, well, if I can't lose the weight, I'm not doing it. Whereas my trainer would be, I don't give a shit what you have to do. You are going to do it. That you do it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no sort of question.
100%.
And from that sort of one fight becomes to, even when I fought overseas for the Worlds where I got my two silvers and bronze, it was like, all for me, all I needed to do was win one. If I won one, the rest was easy. And when I say easy, because you won the one. You don't want to bow out on not winning at all. And for me, that was always the struggle, because it was my mind that let me down. You know, the million conversations of, oh my God, what if I lose? What will my friends think? You know, I've worked so hard. And that was just a constant in boxing especially. Not so much in stick fighting. And I think with the boxing, that's where I guess I like that one the most, because it challenged me the most.
I was going to say, why is that, the difference between the two? Is it just because of level of expertise in it, or confidence, or shame factor, or what was...
Probably the last two that you said, the confidence and the shame factor, because stick fighting, I don't know what was different about that. I actually took to that like a duck to water, not that I won every single fight, but it just worked, because it was easier. It just became, even the fighting aspect, not so much the skill aspect, oh my God, that took ages, but the fighting, you know, I remember we went to Sydney, it was just the three of us, my instructor and two others, and it was like, yep, you're going to jump in and have a fight. And double stick was my thing. And it was like, oh, my God, why is this so simple? Yet boxing was my Achilles. You know, I don't know what it was, whether it was just because you're stripped bare, and I don't mean physically, I mean mentally, because you're in there, you've got an opponent, someone who actually wants to knock your head off, and there's no one else there that can help you. Whereas I guess stick fighting, you've got your armor, you've got your sticks, even though we did a lot of the times with no armor, I think there was that protection, be it was not a mental protection, but a physical. Maybe that was part of it as well. Whereas in boxing, there was nothing. There was just you.
Yeah, all on the individual. And, yeah, thanks. You got to keep some of this juice for the book too. I know we're doing the podcast, but, you know, it's all good. Lay it all out. No, but seriously, when it, all of that, so that's a, you know, having all that accomplishment, acknowledgement, the pain, the loss, the wins, all those little and big things that culminate and sort of come to a process of where do you go next? But so was that next of like having those two disciplines, like with the boxing and the stick fighting, was that like, how can I build this foundation to help others? Like, did that give you a strong base with those two disciplines and where that sort of built into the psychotherapy, general counselling and whatnot?
Well, I had the idea of not so much combining both, actually. I had the idea of trying to introduce martial arts in schools for the discipline, for how it helps with focus and concentration and confidence and all that goes with it. But I was, like I said earlier, I was shut down because it was suggested that it encourages violence. And I even had a letter from my psychologist.
Who was that from?
Schools, principals.
Do you know what frustrates me? It's almost like a contradiction, right? I don't know in SA, but like the amount of, you know, because I lived in, like, you know, I was real young when I was in Sydney and I'd done Gokhan Ryu when I was real young. I only done it for like a year, you know, inspired by the Ninja Turtles anyway. So, but all of that, and then when I grew up on the Central Coast, and it's like it seems like all these different martial arts disciplines would hire out all the school halls where all this would take place. You see what I'm saying here?
Yep. Yeah. But you would think, wouldn't you, logically, why wouldn't you want, you know, have someone to come and teach your kids, be it students, whatever, martial arts to help with that focus, that discipline? But again, that sort of research has only been out probably for the last decade. And now, you know, probably in that same amount of time, if not less, where the research also backs the fact that it is, you know, a good type of therapy instead of your mainstream, you know, that we do, you know, sit down and have a chat, incorporating the both and how it actually helps with the mental health issues. And that sort of research has only come out probably in the last 5 years.
And how's it helping all the individuals that you're doing the work with, whether that's corporates, kids, schools, whatever it may be, when it's channeling the different disciplines into the therapy? Like, just put it out there, sort of what it's about and when it's helping different individuals, you know, from school age to adults.
Yeah. Well, I mainly work with kids, and the youngest I've worked with is a 6-year-old, and he had a few anger issues. And it certainly improved a lot of aspects of his life, be it, you know, school focus, because he used to get in trouble, you know, the parents used to get phone calls, to now an 11-year-old or 10-year-old that I trained, who, again, anger issues, and that seems to be the topic of the last sort of, you know, 12 months, 18 months. And he had an instant change. He wasn't like speaking with his mother, he used to sort of fight with his sister. Mother brought him to me, and there was an instant change where she messaged me, because I like to obviously follow up, see how the youngsters like their sessions. And it was an immediate. It was like, yeah, he jumped in the car, started talking to me, told me about what you guys did, got home, helped me in the kitchen, things that hadn't been happening. So sometimes you get that instant change and then you get the slower change, but a change nonetheless, where I train these young three boys, teenagers, they're in the foster system and they live with a foster parent, whereas one of them, he was very much not the victim, but there was a lot of low self-worth, low self-esteem, where he flipped it to a sort of give up attitude. As soon as, you know, I'd pull him up on something, that was it. It was he'd give up. But now I've seen, and probably more changes through him than any of the other two, where he just do it. He just does whatever I ask him to do. I mean, that being said, there's another one in the group where he's got actually a brain injury, but he's one of the ones that never gave up. You know, because what I do with those boys is at the end of our 10 sessions, because we do like 10-session block, we do some sparring. Obviously, it's very controlled sparring, no hits to the head, that sort of thing. But he would be the one that would withstand the other two. So, you know, I've seen changes from the three of them, two out of the three. And like I said, one where I thought it was going to take a lot more time, where now he's just, yep, comes to the sessions. Doesn't matter if he's sick. He wanted to participate the other night. He was sick as, but still wanted to do it. But I actually said to him, no, don't. Mm. So it's those sorts of changes, because I try and incorporate, and I am harsh. I can be very harsh, but that's
good. You know,
life is harsh. Yeah. And this is what I try and embed in these three, especially because they're at that teenage age where, you know, it's high school, where it's work, where you're just going to have to deal with what life throws at you.
That's it, because some kids don't realize how hard that is. Like, it's been living life like this, and then it's out to the wilderness of being an adult, and it's like, shit, I wasn't prepared for this. And just, you know, it's like, and all the different levels of, you know, just the general responsibilities of being an adult. And, you know, and I'm glad that you're talking about where you're doing a lot of work with youngsters. Like, I've worked with kids over the years and still, and that's where it all starts with. It's like with kids, you know, because then yeah. If they're going through hard times, whatever facet of life that he or she are in, and a lot, because, you know, if you can make a positive difference, and then it's that little thing that can push that kid in the right way, and it's the right type of discipline, like you said, it's coming in, you know, with the realities of life and not buttering stuff up. So then it's just being prepared, hey.
Exactly right. And that being said, although these three kids are in the foster system, they've got, you know, great parents, and they've obviously not had the easiest of life. Unfortunately, it's not going to get any easier. Mm. So that's what I try and incorporate in my training, where I make them do, you know, the 100 push-ups and the 100 sit-ups, and because, you know, it sort of starts there. You need to, that's your foundation. So if you can't handle, you know, doing 100 push-ups, and I'm not picking a number, this is the stuff that I've been taught to do too through my trainer, so I sort of incorporate the same thing. If you can't even handle that, well, how are you going to handle what life's going to throw you? Because it's going to be a lot harder than 100 push-ups and 100 sit-ups.
100%. And then, you know, it's channeling, you know, even if that youngster's doing five, or maybe they have to do the push-ups on their knees because of, you know, just their capacity. Their hear that, youngsters? Vicky doesn't muck around here, so.
No.
That's awesome. No, but it's, you know, if it's given, you know, a percentage of something, you know, if it's, because that's the mental game, it's,
yeah.
How personally, like, this is just going back to just say putting it on my disability, like when it's got to do with quadriplegia, like I'm C5, C6, incomplete quad, and like, you got the physicality of it, but really it's the mental game and mental load of balancing that, and just trying to, you know, you're still breathing, so it's just trying to recognize that. And even with the capacity of what I've got, life goes on, and it's just trying to carve out mentally, you know, what best can suit that and take advantage of it. It does, and that's where, if I'm talking to other people, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, the type of disability or ability, or if you're, you know, if you're not a 6 foot, you know, X whatever athlete that you want to be, but you're not, but if you can still channel certain situations that make life, you know, easier for you, being hard on yourself, and have that self-discipline, that can, you know, there's all different facets of life where people can fit into. Like, life's not so much black and white, there's gray everywhere, and it's just trying to explore that. Hey, you think?
Absolutely. And I don't discriminate against anyone. Like, if you want to come and train with me, be it you're in a chair, you've got a brain injury, I will treat you like I treat whoever else I'm going to train that hasn't got that issue.
Good.
Because especially like my kid, as I said, with a brain injury, he's got a bit of a speech impediment as well, but I don't care. But he's the one that will sit there and do his so many push-ups. I don't care that it's going to take you longer than the others. I just don't want you to give up. I just want you to try.
That's good. Given, you know, given something. Hey, have you ever been involved with youngsters going through juvenile justice systems at all?
It's funny you should say that. I actually work in youth detention, and I have done so for the last 2.5 years. Not so much the last few months, but yes, yes, I have.
That's awesome, because I'm just feeling this energy now, and I know what, because I've been involved with youngsters going through the system and just
the unfortunate thing is that they do not allow me to teach the martial arts there. Everything I have to do there is through the verbal.
Oh, really? Like, really?
Because
I've just seen how, because I'm First Nations, I'm Aboriginal, I'm Wanneroo, Kamilaroi, and just saying, and involved with a lot of mob there and youngsters, and because you got a lot of mob youngsters, mob that are mixed up in the boxing scene, and I've just seen youngsters that are going through tough times, and just how much boxing alone can help, and the discipline of it. And when it's channeled in the right way and get taught the right way.
Yeah.
And just what that can do. And like you see this stuff, like when the amount of like people that I've seen and Australians, and when it's got to do with if it's, combat sports in general, and just how much, how it saved them, and where life could have went that direction. But the discipline of what this is just being able to, and not to say that they're competing, not everybody has to compete in it, but just the fact of doing it and how it helps the individual.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point you make. And just to use my own experiences, and even with the kids that I'm watching, I could never have imagined that I would get fourth degree and a second degree, not in a million years, because that wasn't my aim initially. When I first started with my second instructor, it was mainly just to get a black belt. But then I didn't know that there were other things that were going to come up, i.e. my mental health issues. And having this unorthodox instructor who, there was tears, there was I'm going to give up. And then there was that, and I hate to say it because it sounds so cliche, but that aha moment where I went, I'm really sick of being angry. I'm really sick of feeling this way. I wonder what it feels like to actually be happy. Let's do that. And that's where that turned, my martial arts turned a corner. And then when I started competing, it was like, oh, I'm actually quite good at this. Not ego speaking, but you could see the skill. So I was like, why not try and take it as far as I could take it? And not saying that for everyone, but for the kids that I train or anyone I'd want to train, you want to see that penny drop. And I've seen it quite a few times because I've done this for a while, where you see it. And it's like, that's where we want to be. You don't have to fight. You don't have to compete. But as soon as you see that penny drop or that flick of the switch, it's like, yeah, that's what I want to see. And you see that difference in the whole, not just there, in the whole physical, in the way they move, the way they train. It's just, let's up the ante.
And how does that feel to you when you're, you could have been working with a youngster for ages and it feels like it's getting nowhere, and then suddenly you were talking about that aha, and then you can see the development of the youngster. How does that make you feel, and what you're doing with them?
Oh, look, it feels great, but more for them than sort of me. But also, it's not a unfortunate straight line of they're going to be doing good in every session. I mean, I have one youngster in amongst the three that will give me awesome 1 week, and then not so awesome the next week, and it goes up, and it's this sort of action as well. So you kind of like got to take what you get, but it's in those moments where you have those conversations of, okay, obviously we both know you have the potential to exceed, your expectations. So what happens in that other week where it's not so good? And this is where these conversations happen, because you see it. So you can't take it back. And this is what I say to them. You've shown me you can do it, and you can do it really well. So you can't go backwards now. So we've got to stay on this trajectory of keeping that, that skill level up and that mental resistance up. But, it doesn't always happen that way. But it's more when they realize That's the best bit. Mm. Yeah, I feel great, of course, because they've achieved this level. But it's when they realise they can do it is the best.
That's awesome, hey. They can realise that mental momentum and where they can, you know, punch people through the stratosphere if they harness it right. So, but Thilo.
It's actually pronounced Thilo, which is Thilo. The Greek word Thilo, which is Thilo? The Greek word for I yes. want, I need.
Ah, I like that. I like it a lot. So is that, like, where did you pick that word from? Was it, is it, is that your background at all when it's got to do with?
Yeah, so my yep. background is Greek, and my friend who's actually an Aussie, who's my designer, she said to me, oh, Vicky, maybe you should pick a Greek word to use in your business name. And I had a bit of a think. And whether you go see a trainer or a counsellor, the first questions they're going to ask you is, you know, how can I help you? What is it that we can do for you? So that's when I thought, let me use the word. So that's where I thought, let me do that. Let me include fellow active therapy. Because yeah, exactly right. What is it that you want? What is it that you need that I can help you with in both facets? You know, the active side of things and the mental side of things.
That's awesome. And when you're looking at, oh, that's what I wanted to look into. So Thilo, so active therapy. When you're looking at the boxing, and because you're involved in those other martial arts, but was boxing bringing into it with Thilo because of, like, your passion within that, or is it because it's more also, like, I love boxing, but is it also more translatable physically when it's got to do with doing it with kids and what that represents? So where does the boxing come in?
It's kind of a couple of different things. One, because I found it helped me the most. It broke those barriers, the mental health barriers. So, and of course the research behind it, even Nelson Mandela, you know, while he was in prison all those years, he used it to channel his anger a different way. So obviously, you know, there's research out there, but also with kids. I mean, I want to put gloves on, I want to hear, and that's the first thing they want to do. But the way I train it is very different. I train it from a mindfulness perspective. So I've got a different trainer, obviously, here in Melbourne, and we've been training now for a few years, 5 years. And he really focuses on the footwork. So that's where I've used it. Because it's worked for me. When I train, I'm there. I'm all there. And I know when I'm not, I miss a step. And you can't be doing that when you're boxing, especially sparring. So what I do with these young ones is we work the footwork. And we'll do the footwork and the movements for probably at least 10 sessions. They won't even probably put gloves for at least 10 sessions, because you've got to get the foundation. And that's in anything we do. And that's where that focus and the discipline, and even if it's boring, because I've, you know, had that kind of feedback, it's not about that. You need to be here. You need to focus on this. You need to start with that foundation, and that's in anything. Be it your job, you're not going to become manager straight away. You got to learn the other things in that job, the other areas of that job. So, and it's the same thing with boxing. But I found boxing to be the most beneficial. I mean, stick fighting is kind of the same because it's got some warm-up drills, but that's a lot lot of mental exhaustion in that. I had one of my youngsters got him through some of the stick fighting warm-up drills, and he was like, you could see his head about ready to explode. Whereas the boxing's a little less, but you still got to focus.
Yeah, so true when it comes to footwork. Like, you look at some of the greats when you're looking at just say a recent great, and he's going through hard times when you're looking at the Matrix, Lemonchenko, Ukrainian,
yes,
in his home country, defending. But you're looking at what he did before he got into a boxing ring, where his dad put him into traditional Ukrainian dancing and put him through that for years before he was even able to enter the boxing ring. And you can see that, how that translated.
Exactly.
That footwork is just out of control, being able to duck weave out of the way, and just perpetuated him to the stratosphere of what he's doing today. And, hey, good on him to, you know,
Yeah, that's taking it from a different perspective.
Mm.
You know, I think we're too caught up, and maybe that's a Western attitude, we're too caught up in just going this straight line, where let's look at other things that can actually do the same, help you in that whatever perspective, you know, perspective sport, be it boxing, be it whatever. Look at the other things that might actually help you.
Yeah, because a lot of people want to use these first before they work on anything else, and that's pretty typical across combat sports and whatnot. So, but obviously it's different with taekwondo. But yeah, I just love it. Hey, and it's awesome what you're doing. It's awesome what you're doing. So, rolling through COVID times. So, because I'm just seeing like a lot of kids, because you're thinking of the school missing out. You know, everybody's missing out, but when kids are missing out on some real formative years, when it's got to do with just growing up, finding out who they are, and you know, you got all these chemical imbalances and whatnot. Like, what have you seen through COVID times and working with a lot of these youngsters across the board?
Well, the first thing I've noticed is that they don't train, because obviously when we're in lockdown, you couldn't really do any face-to-face. And although, you know, we did try a bit of the online, that really didn't work as well.
No.
You're not going to get that same. No, kids easily distracted, especially the younger ones. You know, when I'm physically there and present, that's a bit different. You know, we tried with a few parents, with some of the youngsters, but it was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to walk away now. I don't want to do this. And they could walk away. You can't stop that because you're online. Whereas obviously the face-to-face, they wouldn't dare walk away. And they wouldn't, because you're there, you're doing it. You know what I mean? So it was very different. And the other thing with that is I did lose a few clients, because, you know, you had that long period of, you know, us being locked down, that, you know, there were other things that they were doing, or they just weren't interested anymore. And, you know, with kids, they want to try different things, and you can't blame parents. They want these kids to try different things. So as soon as you're sort of out of COVID, it was like, I want to do this, I want to swim, or I want to, I don't know, play a musical instrument, or, and you sort of can't take that away. So what sort of happened for me now is a lot of the clients have gone fortnightly, which is fine, because, you know, I'm not going to hold any child back if they want to try different things. And that's a good thing, because then you can see what you like and what you don't like.
Do you reckon social media is a big distraction too, like in general? Like, because I didn't have that when I was at school, and just of what the power that can possess, like for the positive and the negative, you know?
Well, look, I didn't grow up with it either. And for the kids that I do train, the parents have sourced me obviously through the website or another place I used to work, because of what I do, the uniqueness behind, you know, the martial arts therapy. So, and these kids aren't really social media sort of savvy. They don't really, because like I said, the age group goes from about 6 to 15. And, you know, there's obviously a limit to what social media they can jump on or use. And a lot of these parents don't encourage it anyway. So I'm kind of lucky from that perspective that, you know, they come to me for what I can deliver and what I can help them with, because their young person's going through whatever they're going through, be it developmental issues, mental health issues, you know, anger issues. So the social media hasn't really impacted as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure it does. And touching on that, you said developmental. So if it's looking at cognitive, intellectual, or if it's looking at physical disabilities, because I've seen that you've got the on your website, which is great, when it's the IHARD NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, the second largest reform since Medicare, looking after a whole host of individuals all over the country from the ages of 5 to 65. So how has that worked out with you, like with people with disabilities ever approaching you, or you seeing people around with disabilities and having a yarn up and telling them? Because I think it's important, like no matter your ability, like you said, you've gone back to, if it's someone in the chair, even if they're swinging around and it's moving, it's doing something physically and mentally.
But so you know what it does? It awakens this.
Yeah.
And this awakens the rest. You know what I mean? But going back to what you were asking, I work up with a lot of kids who are on the spectrum. So that sort of happened accidentally, but it's great for me. I mean, look, I can't help every single kid on the spectrum because they're all very different. My nephew's actually autistic as well.
Oh, so they huge. Come
in various sort of stages. But for those that I can help, I'm currently working with one young person who's also got trauma plus, you know, he's on the spectrum, but he's minimal on the spectrum. But he's impressed me a lot, actually. And it's unfortunate that they're six. I can't train them tomorrow. But I've been working with him for the last sort of 3 weeks. And, gee, has he gotten out of his shell. Even to the point that I like telling this story. He called me old, like, you're a granny. And I laugh because it's like, this is a kid that didn't even know me 3 weeks ago that probably gave me two words. And now it's like, yep,
yeah,
I've got to put the gloves on. And I got the gloves on him the other day because you see that change. And it's like, man, I'm happy to sort of accommodate. You know, you do what I'm asking you to do and I'll definitely deliver what you know. And we do things at the end like, well, who can hold their breath the longest, which he actually forgot about the other day because we had the gloves on. Or, you know, just different things. But I also give, you know, kids like him and probably all my kids breathing techniques, which I use as well. So it's not just all the martial arts. It's other things on top of that, like breathing techniques, because that's worked for me. And because they are younger, it's a good place to start as well. So, you know, I work with, like I said, the TBI, the brain injuries, kids on the spectrum. I don't care where you're coming from. If you want my help, I'm going to do the best that I can to help you.
Boom. Love it. So kids in general, kids with disability, doesn't matter who it is, where they're coming from. So who is this all catered for? You touched on kids. Are you looking outside of the scope within that when it's with what you're doing with Thilo?
Oh, look, I'll train with anyone, but it just seems that my target market or they've come to me, you know, it's the kids, it's parents sort of coming to me and asking if I can help their young people. So, you know, I'm open to adults and I've worked with some adults. I probably work with more adults in Adelaide than I've done so here. But it seems, and perhaps it's because of the pandemic, that it's a lot of, you know, let's call them adolescents, young people, children that are suffering the most. And look, not to sound cliche, but they are our future. So we want to get our future right. Because, you know, these guys are going to end up being managers, parents themselves, you know, going to be doing whatever they're going to be doing, following their passions. So I think for me, it starts here and now, getting it right now.
That's right. And the box within, so it seems like there's a lot of juice in there, Vicky Seymour. So looking within that, so where did all that come about? So I just want to touch on that. So, and obviously don't want to give too much juice away because it's good to sort of put it out there for people to jump on and, you know, really have a look at this. And is it unpacking who you are and your story? Where does that, what I'm trying to say is like, where did the thought process come from to kick that off? And without giving too much away of the book, like just talk us in and around that.
Well, I'm very much, when someone says to me, oh, here's an idea, I go, yeah, I'll run with it. So basically I used to work in the sleep psychology department in Adelaide and I'd made friends with one of the ladies there who was also my client at the time. And she's like, you know what, you should write a book on your experiences in the martial arts. And I'm like, what a great idea that is. So moving forward, once I got into uni, I'm not shy about asking questions. So I basically sourced someone that was able to help me. And she's like, you know, give me so many words or so many pages, which I did. And then it sort of grew from there. And, just kept writing and then found an editor through my uni years. And then, yeah, so it's basically an autobiography on the experiences that I've had with martial arts and how it sort of helped me combat the mental health issues. But it's also sort of, I guess, an offspring or an offshoot of the business itself. So that's it's, you know, awesome. Catalyst from one of the other, I guess.
Yeah. And so is it like with the book itself, is it Like when it's like an easy read, like if it's for youngsters, adults, is it for everyone? Who does it cater for? Me.
Absolutely everyone. I don't know. There's probably maybe a couple of swear words in there. I'm not sure. But it's basically, you know, and I don't want to give too much away either, but it's...
Keep the juice.
And it's basically encouraging anyone and everyone, you know, from where you are. If you don't like where you are, you know, you can change who you are. Yes, it's going to be hard, but depends on how much you want it. And these are some of the things, look, that I did. And look, martial arts isn't for everyone, and I'm not saying everyone should jump in and do martial arts, but find something that, you know, can move you, some sort of passion within you, i.e. the boxer within, and run with it. But try different things. Don't just sit stagnant, you know, and don't get caught up in whatever's going on with you. And, I mean, now these days we've got so much out there, you know, counsellors and, yeah. So it's basically don't stay where you are if you're not happy. Try. And I know it's easier said than done. And I'll make it sound simple now, but it's not, obviously. I mean, like I said to you earlier, the last 4 days I've been feeling very down. And I contacted a friend to say to her, look, I don't normally do this with you, but I actually really need to talk. So, you know, the book's about that as well. It's, you know, don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel shameful. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. Just do something.
That's awesome. You know, just laying it all bare. And just you heard Vicky, folks, like don't stay stagnant. You've got to keep the wheels moving forward, or, you know, legs moving forward. But you know, really appreciate your time, like jumping on here and having you on. Is there anything that you wanted to address before we wrap it up? And also, if any social media accounts, website, whatever it is, throw that out in the atmosphere too.
Well, I was going to say, if you're a parent out there, or if you are the person that wants to, you know, trial what I do, you can find me on www.fellowactivetherapy.com, or you can email me on VickySimos@yahoo.com. I'm all on all social media platforms, your LinkedIn, your Facebook, your Instagram. You can also, I was going to give my a number away, but we won't do that. But that being said, that's all on the website anyway. If you want to grab a copy of the book, you can email me or send me through some like your information via the website, and I can get you a signed copy. Alternatively, it's available on all online booksellers, you know, like your Amazon, your big Book Depository, Booktopia, all those ones. So yeah, that's the way to get the book as well.
Boom, awesome. It's all out there, folks. Get amongst it, get a hold of it, the books, the training, you heard. So Vicky, much appreciated for your time, and just with everything starting to open up. I know COVID's still amongst us, but I really hope, you know, and not just youngsters, but, you know, adults too, look into what you're doing and want to reach out and jump into your training and give it a crack, because, you know, physically and mentally, you know, can push people into a better place. So appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you letting me be a part of your podcast. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Take care.
Take care, mate. Thanks very much. Bye.
Right, bye. See you, folks. If any youngsters are out there and hear this, reach out to her. She's got a lot of good programs that would help yourself find those building blocks that may help you with life. Accountability, discipline. You've heard of contacts. Reach out. Give it a go. See if it's for you. If you're in and around that Victoria, Melbourne region. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. And we've also got a Patreon page. The link is within the description. So if you check it out and want to roll with the squad and become a patron, that'd be awesome. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at streetrollingcheetah, or email one word, streetrollingcheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. they've got great assistive tech also. So, righto, see you on the next one.